Here on Mother Love, we celebrate moms, their bravery, wisdom, and strength, their endurance and wit, dedication and sacrifice. We speak about the transformation in body, mind, and soul that is required on this sacred journey. We discuss what it takes to conceive, grow, birth, and welcome a baby into this big, wide, messy world. Mother Love is a safe space to witness each other in the darkest and brightest of moments. Mother Love is a place where you can let it all out and just be. A place to harvest your deep wisdom and spread hope to all the moms out there who still feel invisible. Welcome to Mother Love, where we love on mothers. We're so glad you're here.
Hello, listeners. I always like to say hi to our listeners. Thank you for being with us today. I get the privilege of talking with Jenny Buescher, right?
Mm-hmm, yes. You got it.
This is such a joke. It's like every podcast now. I'm like, did I get your last name right? Yay.
Nailed
Score
it. Yeah.
Bonus points there. And Jenny is here in Helena also, but the snow is falling, and because of the pandemic, we are not meeting in person. We are Zooming, doing the Zoom thing. And Jenny, why don't you just tell us, I always like to ask kind of like, can you give us a snapshot of a day in the life? Like what does early morning look like for your family? And can you kind of just give us a sense of what your environment is like in your world right now?
Sure. So, well, thanks for having me as a guest. This is really exciting. So, gosh, a day in my life. I would say if you picture like a really stereotypical type A control freak, that's me.
Uh-huh.
And then if you can picture a really laid back, gracious, compassionate human being, that's my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And so early morning usually looks like me getting up early and, trying to get the kids fed and dressed and get everything perfectly ready so that we can get out the door. I have a 4-year-old son, Jonah, and then an 8-month-old daughter, Jovi. So trying to get them out of the door so that my husband and I can both get to work. So we're actually working on campus at our respective jobs right now. So it's a scramble. Every morning, I have to tell you, Claire, I'm like, I'm going to do this today. I'm going to be calm. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the kids ready. I'm going to take a deep breath. And every morning, it's like cursing and I do something wrong. And my husband is just like totally calm through it all.
Yeah.
And somehow we get the kids out the door, we scramble, head to work. And then it's kind of that dash. We pick them up and eat dinner, take bath, read books, go to bed, clean the house, do it again.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh. So a couple things come up as you're describing that. One, when I first started working at Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, I remember Brie and I got divorced kind of around the same time, Brie a little bit after me. And so one beautiful thing about our work relationship is we can come in and sort of say like, hey, how did your solo morning go? Hey, how did yours? And like, we're always like, it was a disaster. But what we were saying is like, someone should set up just a camera and do, you know, just film like trying to get out the door in the morning. And that it would be like its own reality show. It would be like, you know, half an hour of telling people to get their coats on and that kind of thing. And then people would watch it and they would just feel so much better. that like every parent gives themselves these impossible expectations every morning. Like as if this will be the day that everything will go smoothly. And then every morning we're like, why did it go so bad? And we're like, well, because like it's an impossible task. But and then the other thing I was thinking is like, how are your kids doing with daylight savings?
Oh my gosh, horrid. It's horrid.
Yeah, it's horrid. Let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah, it is like I just feel like daylight savings screws parents everywhere, right?
It really
sleep
does.
Schedule's totally off. It is like Jonah is has been as crabby as if he like ate a cake and watched TV all day. Like that's the degree to which he just gets tapped out at night, but he's doing better. He's adjusting. Right. But yeah, I solidarity to all the parents that have to deal with that. It is no fun.
My daughter has always, my oldest has always woken up like god awfully early. She gets up, her normal time to get up is like right around six. So this morning started at 4:55 at my house because her internal clock is still programmed to wake up at six. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So more than ever, I've been like grinding the coffee and getting it all perfectly set up so that when that moment comes in the morning, I'm like, okay, I can do this. All I have to do is put hot water on and it's going
to
be up.
Done. Ready to go. Yeah.
But it is. And then at night too, you know, both of them are like, I'm like, what is happening? Oh yeah. Right. We're getting up at five. And we're going to bed later and things are awry. Yeah. I thought it was bad when I was like young and single and daylight savings would screw me up. I had no idea.
Like, my mother-in-law goes, oh, I'm so excited. I get an extra hour of sleep this weekend. And I just feel like my eyeballs shot daggers at her. Cause I was like, do not.
So, totally. Yeah.
Or she's awesome. So.
Even when people tell you like, have a good weekend as like when you have a new baby, you're like, what's a weekend? Like, what do you, that just
means, have no idea.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, good. Well, so I think we have a snapshot and we were talking a little bit before, but can you give us, I mean, that is work, what we just talked about, but can you give us a sense of what you and your husband do for work in the world other than raising humans right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband does public relations for the state parks, which is great. And I get to lead culture at Chaudière Children's Hospital. So I'm a registered nurse and I'm the chief culture officer. And so what that really means is that I get to incorporate our trauma-informed model of care. And I get to integrate some of Brené Brown's leadership training into the work that we do, really, so we can be a great place to work for employees, so we can serve our kids and families. So I've been at Chaudière for a total of about 8 years leading, and I really love it. And then I'm also going to school to get my doctorate right now to become a psychiatric nurse practitioner.
So, whoa.
Yeah.
That's like
all
a
the things.
Major full plate. Yeah. Wow. Amazing. So when did you start your training with Brené? When did you start incorporating your Brené Brown wisdom that you learned in training with her into your practice at Chaudière?
Good question. So I would say the social services industry has a pattern of promoting people sometimes out of what they're good at. So I was this floor nurse. I was a good floor nurse. And then I was promoted into a management position, didn't have a ton of leadership experience and quickly realized, gosh, I don't know if I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I really started digging into Brené Brown's work before she wrote Dare to Lead. Mm-hmm. But in about like 2014 is when I started. And then I've worked with an executive coach and it really was this realization that, oh my gosh, leadership is not necessarily, you don't either just like have it or you don't. It's really taught and it's learned and it's teachable and measurable. So I have a great boss and I went to him in 2019. I said, you know, Craig, I really want to apply to work with Brené Brown directly. And he didn't know who Brené Brown was at the time, but he really empowers people.
Yes.
I know. Gasp, right? So don't worry. He knows now. So he said, sure, go for it. Like there were like 30,000 people, I guess, that applied for this program. So I'm like, it doesn't matter, Craig, because I'm not going to get in. Ended up getting in, working with Brené Brown. Now I'm a certified Dare to Lead trainer or facilitator. And we started incorporating her work officially last 2019 at Chaudière with the executive leadership team.
Yeah. How amazing. That's so incredible. I mean, I'm familiar with her and then I have read part of Dare to Lead, but haven't finished it because I haven't finished any books in a really long time. But she's such a beautiful, she just has such a beautiful way of expressing and being accessible, but just also so knowledgeable. And yeah, how wonderful. And have you seen the skills, like having them come into play at Chaudière? Have you seen the culture change quite significantly, or how would you say that's going?
I would say when we started the work, our teams, I guess, number one goal, the goals that kind of saturated everything, were people felt like they wanted to get better at having hard conversations.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's one of the things that leaders need to do. If feedback is a function of respect, we have to give people feedback, but it's not always easy. So people said, you know, I want to get better at having hard conversations. And I think the Dare to Lead program helped us so much with that. And we have to practice it every day, though. We have to keep circling back, because it's really easy when you're talking about it out of context to say, oh yeah, like this is how I'm going to have that tough conversation. I'm ready for it. And then you sit down with someone and you're like, actually, nope, you know, and you don't want to have it. And so, but I would say people are getting a lot braver at having hard conversations. People are becoming more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I actually have seen, and this is not just credit to Dare to Lead, because we also have a fabulous leader. So I think I've seen through COVID-19, our team have those hard conversations and then also be more innovative and creative and less, you know, we haven't responded with rigid authority. I feel like we've really responded with creative compassion and new ideas. So that's felt really good. And I think Dare to Lead has just been one piece of that, but a pretty incredible piece.
Yeah, cool. And then can we kind of follow that thread? And can you talk about how doing the work that you have done over, you know, I imagine it extends beyond 8 years, but let's just say 8 years and working in the way that you do, how do you feel like that has impacted your role both as a mother and as, you know, as a partner? Having hard conversations when we're raising children is sometimes the hardest, because both partners are usually so taxed that it's really difficult to come without being defensive or guarded or just exhausted. So can you talk a little bit about how you've kind of invited and welcomed that into your family life too?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, what I would say is that it's been helpful that my husband, James, has probably the highest emotional intelligence of anyone I know. So he gives me a lot of grace. He's very kind. He gives me a lot of grace. But what I would say is really, you know, one of the things is who you are is how you lead. So I don't show up at work with a different set of values. We have the same, I operate with the same values at work that I do at home. And being that type A, right? James and I sat down and we were like, let's talk about our family values. So we identified those values, we operationalized them, and we really try to lead, which is, I know it's like, gosh, that's more uncomfortable. It's like operationalizing values. But we try to lean into those, but I would say more so than that, what I found is that during times of stress, people, you know, Brené Brown talks about armoring up. So there are pretty common reactions to stress. And that armor looks like leaning in, trying to please people, pulling away, and then kind of leaning towards, like fighting shame with shame. And, you know, when I'm stressed at work, I lean in. I try to people please. I try to accomplish more tasks. And the bummer for my poor husband's at home, when I'm stressed, I totally like, you know, we butt heads, and he's very gracious. And so he knows a lot of the Dare to Lead content because we've been working together on it, and just recognizing, you know, when we're armoring up has been really helpful. So we can take a deep breath and know, okay, maybe we're not in a good space right now. Now's a good time to like lay down our armor, lean into vulnerability and see what's really going on here. Mm-hmm. So we actually practice a lot of the principles at home, and you know, it's really helpful that James says he's taken a deep dive into the work with me too, which has been great. We've got that shared language.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Okay, well, now we're going to have to do the thing where we like rewind.
Sure.
But before we do, since we're still on this topic, you know, and maybe it will make more sense as I'm saying it to talk about how you became a mother and kind of dip into your experience of birth and then specifically what it's been like to have a really little one during COVID-19. But I know that you and James decided to form an LLC out of some special circumstances that occurred this year, like we've all gone through, right? These circumstances that we probably never would have imagined, and here we are. But how can you tell a little bit to our listeners about what the LLC is, and just give us a little taste of what's going on there?
Yeah, I'd love to. So, you know, we had Jovi on March 13th. Mm-hmm. And 2 days later, James and I both got emails from our employer saying, okay, we're shutting down. Everyone has to stay at home. And we can talk a little bit more about that. But essentially, James and I experienced just radically different responses to COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And I had this experience, like I've alluded to, where I've had a really gracious leader who leans into vulnerability, who says, you know, I don't have all the answers. We need to stack hands and move forward. How do we do this? So that was my experience. And James didn't have the same experience. And it's not to blame anyone. It's just to say, again, leadership isn't always taught. And so his experience was one out of scarcity and fear. And he experienced leadership that kind of dug into that fear and led with kind of power over, and it put us into scarcity because here I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, we have an infant, we have a toddler at home. People have to be understanding that, you know, maybe your Zoom calls will be interrupted, and people have to be understanding that maybe you have to shift some of your work hours into the evening. And when that understanding was not met with compassion, we were just both floored, and it was super stressful. And I remember there was a day, this sounds so, so sad, but there was a day where I was crying in my room with the kids because I was trying to keep them quiet while James was on the Zoom call, right? Because I was like, oh my gosh, he's going to get in trouble if the kids interrupt this call. You know, I don't want him to lose his job. And it was so stressful. And it was more stressful because I really was continued to be shocked that the compassion wasn't there. And so long story short, we just kind of said, gosh, we need brave leaders right now. Like, this pandemic is too much. We are going to break unless we start teaching leaders. And so James is an improviser. He's worked with Second City. So he's done some improvisation and leadership training. And then I, of course, do the Dare to Lead. We started this LLC. It's called Overstory. And we started that to help leaders navigate these challenging times. Because I will tell you, whether you're a business person and you are really looking out for like the financial impacts of your company, or you're in the social services and you're looking out for patients, like, leadership is essential to the bottom line, to employee success, and to patient success. Mm-hmm. So that's really our passion. And that's how we formed this thing, which has been really exciting. It's been a fun journey.
Yeah, that is really exciting. And I just always, I mean, it's always so cool when something, well, I'll just say it simply, when something beautiful emerges out of something really hard, right?
Yeah.
And it's in my personal experience and in my life, that is a theme that I continually am surprised by. But I find that as I'm getting a bit older in my life, that I can more easily sort of tell myself in the midst of like crying with the babies and trying to keep them quiet or something like that, you know, like that I'm like, oh, can't see it right now, but I know there'll be something and some way that this strengthens what is important, you know.
Oh, and totally.
And but I feel for you. I mean, I think that one particular struggle that I've talked about with other friends and other mothers is like this collapse of barriers between the role of mom and the role of, you know, culture leadership at Chaudière and the role of James's work. And it's like all of a sudden they're all in the same location and you're having to go back, switch back and forth between hats while your children are there going like, why would I have to be quiet? Like, why am I trapped in a room? You know, and you can't explain to a toddler and a little babe, like what's happening. And so they just sense the energy of that. And it is so intense, so challenging. And I feel for you because I know that feeling.
Totally. And then I think it can be also really beautiful. Like James's current job, he just started a few weeks ago and his whole team is like really understanding. And I think there's also something beautiful of seeing who people really are. So I know his leader now is very accepting of like, okay, if the kids come in, that happens, like they're at home. And I love it when I'm Zooming with team members and I see their kids in the background, because gosh, doesn't that build like this authentic connection where it's like, I see the humanity in you and you can see the humanity in me. To me, honestly, what that's done, Claire, is it's broken. You're right. It's broken down barriers. But when people accept that, it actually builds more gracious connections, I think.
Totally.
And then we're more willing to work together because I know, oh gosh, like your kid's not napping right now. Let me do some legwork and you've got my back when my kid's up, you know, which has been really beautiful to see. So again, I really think it goes back to leadership and how are people accepting that and how are we building connections and are we building connections out of compassion or out of scarcity?
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. That's wonderful. And, you know, as always, I could go on for hours about just that topic alone, because I think that, like we said, there hasn't been a lot of space open for people to discuss that. Especially with little ones. We've all just been trying to keep our heads above water. So, and I don't say just little ones, like I'm sure raising a teenager right now has got to be pretty hellacious as well with having to keep them, you know, limiting in their social interactions and stuff like that. But anyway, let's shift a little bit now to your experience of, you know, I think that one of the beautiful things about this is that we do get to share our birth experiences. So if you're open to it, I mean, that was one of the original intentions for starting this podcast was like, man, have you ever sat down with a mom and she told you her birth story and you've never just been like flipping amazed no matter how it goes, you know? And so if you're open to it, like I would love to know how things went for you. What you were expecting, what really happened, just anything you want to share really in terms of that, that you think would be significant.
Yeah, sure. So gosh, I would say like 99% of moms out there, I was like ready to have my baby, right? I was really ready. I was feeling tired and sore and so I had a really awesome midwife who was meeting with me every day, pretty much to try to get labor going. I had like intermittent contractions for almost a week. And then, it was like,
it's brutal.
Yeah, it was not fun. And I also think I was in this space though, before I had Jovi, remembering kind of with this like nostalgia, how Jonah's birth experience. And looking back at that, I was like, oh man, that was so beautiful. So I tried to really hold on to that when I was in labor with Jovi. It only lasted until like things got real, right? Yeah. So, went into the hospital and my awesome in-laws were watching my son. And really, it was just, it's kind of like a blur. I don't know if you experienced that. I'm like, what really happened? But
yeah.
What I would say is, gosh, we were there for a few hours. I knew I was going to have an epidural. I was just like, this is just happening. Please call the guy. James told me that when I got my epidural, I was like telling the anesthesiologist that he was like, I was like, you're like my savior. And I was apparently really loopy because I'm like, I just needed pain relief so badly.
Yeah.
And then
I wonder how often they hear that.
Like, I know, right?
I wonder how often women are just like kissing their feet, like, thank you.
I know. And he was like, oh yeah, I did this. I did your epidural last time. And I was like, great, because it worked super. So please, like, let's just get that going again.
Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and seriously though, I'm so type A. One of my really good friends told me this about her birth story. She said, Jen, I had an epidural. And then the second I got that, I just was like, it was like I was relaxed enough to have the kid. And I have such high anxiety that I swear my body could not let go until it was like forced to relax through medication.
Yeah.
I said, oh my gosh, meditation. Cause I'm thinking, bless the moms that can do meditation and relax their bodies. Like, I have a lot to learn from you and I want to get there, but I apparently needed medical help. So yeah, after that, my body was just able to relax, and my midwife came in at like 3 a.m. I think I pushed twice, and you know, there was Jovi, and it was just before everything with the pandemic hit. So it was really funny because people were like, the hospital staff were joking about like, oh, maybe we should send you home with toilet paper, or have you heard about this thing called COVID? And the day I had her, they didn't shut down visiting yet. They said you could have one visitor at a time. So the things I remember were, you know, we had Jovi, and the next day my in-laws and my son came to the hospital, and I just remember like bawling, which I could cry again just thinking about it, because my son was in the waiting room of the hospital crying. Aww. Saying, I want to see her. He wanted to meet his sister, but he couldn't come up. So people could take turns coming up at that point, and no one had to wear masks yet. So it was, there were fewer restrictions, right? And, you know, I just wanted out of the hospital. I wanted to come back home. And so, you know, we came home, and then, like I said, a couple days later, we got this email from both of our employers saying, you know, you're staying at home. So obviously I had planned to be at home. And I know that's kind of like really glossing over my birth experience, but I think more traumatic than like the birth experience, I know it sounds really weird, but like, was the aftermath. Mm-mm. Was coming home, and it's like, okay, we can't go anywhere. My toddler decided to stop napping.
Oh, right? No.
And then he couldn't go to daycare. And then we had this infant, and it was like, what? I just didn't know what was going on. And it's so yeah. stressful. And I yeah. felt like this intense amount of grief. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like I wasn't bonding with Jovi because I was trying to like corral the children while my husband did meetings.
Yeah.
And all I was trying to do was control things yeah. instead of connect. And gosh, I think, you know, in my line of work, we talk about shame as being the same as trauma, as having like the same physiological impacts as like a physical trauma. And I think that's so true, because more traumatizing than my birth was the shame that just sunk in for, I mean, honestly, I think it was when Jovi was 7 months that I was like, I finally feel like I'm getting to know her. Mm. And I was just deep in shame, and I'm just crawling out of it. Right. But those first 3 months were like particularly traumatic and really isolating.
Yeah.
So, cause you couldn't talk, you know, no one was around to talk to. So yeah.
It's already so isolating to mm-hmm. have a babe and be at home with them. But then when you can't have anyone stop by, or you can't, you know, go get coffee with a friend or anything like that, like those are the things that get us through. So it's not surprising to me. Can you say more about, like, are you able to sort of remember and recall and pinpoint what the conversation was inside of you? Like, what was triggering the shame most, do you think?
Yeah, I think for a lot of my life, I think my self-worth has been attached to this productivity. Mm-hmm. So what can I produce? How can I, you know, accomplish things? And when your worth is attached to that, and then all of a sudden you're like locked in your house for 3 months. Mm-hmm. Like that's tough. Like that becomes very real. And under all other circumstances, you can distract yourself.
Right.
Right. So, but when you are in lockdown, you really can't distract yourself much from having to be with yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think the story in my head was just like, oh, you're such a terrible mom. Like, I remember saying out loud to James, oh man, I just wish that I had things planned for Jonah and I had all these crafts planned. And then, and he's like, yeah, cause it's not like you, it's like you knew a pandemic was coming, right? I mean, I just didn't plan for it. And I felt shame over that. And then I think, you know, in the absence of authentic connection, what many people have experienced, it's not unique to me, is this artificial connection through social media. Mm-hmm. And so you, if when your worth is tied to productivity and then you compound it with this artificial social media, moms holding it together, doing all the things for your kids, like you're just in this really dark space where it feels like you're just not good enough.
Yeah. And like, you're totally alone in your struggles and everybody else is, you know, has got the little glue sticks and glitter out and like, you're just like crying.
Yeah,
like, in the dark corner.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, can someone please, the mom who can pull off glue sticks and glitter, like, please tell me, how do you do that? Right. Mm-hmm. Want to know, but yeah. You're right. It's just, you feel alone.
Yeah, so. For sure. There was something that came up that I was going to ask. Oh, shucks. It left me.
That's
but maybe,
okay.
But maybe it will come back. So that must have just been incredibly difficult. And when I was thinking about, you know, how was it? I'm curious, just myself, and maybe listeners are as well, but I'm curious, you know, when I had my kiddos, especially my first, I was really, I walked the line between like, oh, I want people to meet her and I want to like show her off. And, you know, I'm so excited about this new life. Like I want all my friends to see her and I want people to start knowing her like right away. But you are supposed to be careful about that. You know, you're supposed to be on the watch for threats of germs and things like that before they have any immunizations. And so I'm really curious how that felt, you know, like going to the store even, or these things that even for people who don't have a brand new infant, suddenly something like that becomes super complicated and threatening. And we feel our nervous systems are like, wah, even just having to go get like a can of soup. So can you talk about a little bit about like, how did that feel and how did that play into your mental state?
Yeah, I think, well, my husband was awesome. He did a lot of like the shopping and frankly, I know a lot of people that said, you know, no to grandparents and like, you see those pictures of grandparents meeting babies through windows. And we were like, we have to have Jeff and Kaylee, my in-laws, over. So they were a huge like resource for us and they helped out a lot. They really eased some of that anxiety. They went to the store a lot for us. And I think, honestly, the anxiety wasn't that bad about it unless I was watching or reading the news.
Yeah.
And then it would intermittently peak and I'm like, I have to Clorox everything. And then I would not read the news and it would be like, we're good, you know?
Okay.
So So I think it kind of, you know, waxed and waned a little bit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can you tell us about, can we talk a little bit about like, so Jonah is 4.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me about Jonah? What is he like? You know, how does he feel about being a big bro? Can you just kind of...
Oh, yeah. Jonah is so sweet and compassionate. I think he got all of his dad's best features. He loves to joke, loves to just be silly. He's very, very extroverted. Mm-hmm. Lots of friends. Mm-hmm. Always talking about his friends. He loves being a big brother. He calls Jovi. He goes, oh, isn't she so cute, my little Jovesita? So he calls her Jovesita and he likes to hug her and kiss her. And he's just, he's really transitioned. The weirdest thing about it is, Claire, swear to goodness, like he made the transition easier than we did to 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
which is really cool. It just shows like how resilient young minds are. Yeah. So adaptable.
Yeah.
So.
That's beautiful. And is he back in any sort of like social school environment? Cause as an extrovert, I have an extrovert as well. And it was like death. Like, yes. As soon as she lost her ability to engage with people other than me and her sister, like it was not okay. So yes. I'm curious how that went in your house with another extroverted kiddo.
Oh man, it was like same thing that you're describing. My father-in-law, Jeff, saved us. He would take Jonah like a couple hours, a couple times a week. And that was like, oh goodness, finally he's around someone else. He is back in preschool now and just doing so well. I mean, he's so well adjusted now because he gets that friend time and that play time that I have a hard time filling. Like I said, like, it's really hard for me to play. I'm working on that, but I'm like, I can't, it's so hard for my mind to like play Ninja Turtles. Right.
Hey man, nobody wants to play Ninja Turtles.
No, it's like, I don't I get it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's doing great. He, back in school and doing super, super well because of that connection with other kids, I think.
Yeah. Good. You know, you mentioned a little bit that you're more of an introvert, and I identify also, I have parts of me that are extroverted, but it really, if you like zoom in, I get way more restorative when I'm alone and doing quiet things, which I've learned, that's been a learning lesson for me. But what I am curious about is with your introverted nature that you described, you know, one of the things that I missed the most when we all got lockdown came and we all were like, okay, you know, everything's closed. We're not going anywhere. Here's the thing. Like, I really noticed how much my small interactions with people meant to me that I lost. Like, you know, saying hello to the grocery store clerk and being a little more friendly than I have to be, or the people who make my coffee in the morning. Like, there's just those like little interactions that are only minutes or moments long. I suddenly, as an introvert, was like, oh man, like that was like my one expression of extroversion. And even just, I experienced having those cut off. I was like, oh, like you said, you're kind of just bouncing around in your own brain a little too much.
Oh, totally. I totally get that. I was just talking to a coworker about that because our team was saying, oh gosh, we feel disconnected, but we're meeting on Zoom all the time. And what she and I kind of landed on was, what we're missing is those moments after the meeting where someone reaches over to you and they're like, how is your son doing? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, where'd you get those shoes? Mm-hmm. Or do you want to walk down and get a coffee with me? Like, those little moments are the moments that build trust and connection. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're built for, right? We're all built for trust and connection. And I feel you, those things filled me up for sure, and helped establish a sense of safety and trust, especially at work, that's now lost. And so I think people just have to get creative about how do you reestablish that. And like, I have one of my coworkers is doing this awesome thing. I think some people roll their eyes at her, but this is really cool. She puts together these like Zoom trivia games. She asks us questions and then she says, okay, so who, you know, when they were in second grade, broke their arm, and we just have to guess. And it's just learning little bits about each other. And it feels really silly, I think, in the moment. And maybe there are people listening that are like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad I don't work with you, Jenny. But I think that those are the things that, again, establish that psychological safety. So when you have to have those hard conversations about a failure at work or about a risk at work, or even in your personal life, any of this could be applied personally, the safety is there to work through those conversations. Yes.
And even just knowing, even just having the context, like you said, for example, of like breaking your arm in the second grade, like we all had something happen to us in the second grade that felt equally scary. And just the fact that like you can break, your body can break, you know, and if it's someone who you work with, who you've never thought, you know, maybe they're a super strong, you know, type A, like always have it together person, and you think of them in distress, it does add a layer of like understanding their humanity. And that's where connection comes from, right? Is it's not like how many points can you express during a meeting that are productive. You know, I mean, those things are important too, but like you're saying, it's these little human tidbits or morsels that we have that really allow us to then better understand what's being presented as far as just cold, hard information.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I find fascinating as it applies to relationships is that a lot of times people will say, well, gosh, if you're so understanding of people, you're just making excuses for them. And that's not true. Like, data show that, and as a matter of fact, connection is correlated with accountability. Mm-hmm. And so not only does it increase our connection, but it increases our capacity to hold one another accountable at work and at home.
Yeah.
So it's really great. And those are those things. Like I always say, I'm not a fun person. And so I really need help being fun. But if you've got coworkers that are fun and have that bone in their body, like trust them, because those are the things that are going to help take your team further.
Yeah. Cool. And is there anything that, like in being in close study with Brené Brown and her work, and if people who are listening don't know of Brené Brown, that's okay. We forgive you, but I'll post some, I'll post some show notes, specifically to Dare to Lead, of course, because I know that's been a big foundation for you. But I'm curious, you know, I've been listening to Brené Brown's new podcast, which I'm totally in love with. And I know that it's become popular very quickly, which is no surprise. Her interviewing skills are incredible. But what I'm wondering is, did she come out with some things that were like post-COVID that some principles or some things to try as far as leadership goes that are new, that are specific to this new climate that we're all living in?
Yes, I think a couple of really exciting things. She's coming out with a second iteration of Dare to Lead, which is really great, with with thousands of pieces of new research that support the data. Something that she's really focused on, we've had a couple of Zoom calls with her, and I've been really impressed with the way that she's focused on, yes, it's very important to maintain safety during this time due to COVID. But she's really leaned into diversity and equity and inclusion, because not only are we in a, you know, health crisis, but we're in like this psychological, you know, I should have asked, like, how do you feel about cursing? You know, but we're in this storm, let's say, of really scary psychological, you know, trauma for people with systemic racism. And I think that we need to address that as being equally, if not more traumatizing than COVID, right? So so I say that to say, she's really leaned into that and helped facilitators find ways to include diversity and equity and inclusion into the work as well, which has been pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's been my experience of her COVID response as well. And it's been really beautiful because like, her interviews with folks are just so incredibly compassionate, and the way she holds space is just amazing. So, we forgot to talk about Jovi.
Yeah.
We talked about Jonah, but tell me about Jovi. What is Jovi like?
Oh my gosh, Claire. She is so laid back. She is.
I'm trying not to hate you right now, but.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, not to say that she sleeps. It's so fun. She doesn't like cry in the middle of the night as much as she just like babbles and banters and goes on at night. She is so sweet. Just laid back, smiley, joyful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that she is the baby. You know, Jonah's the first baby. He helped me grow a lot, but there's a lot of space to also still maintain your comfort as a human, as an individual when you have one child, which it's hard. It's an adjustment having one child. That's not to minimize that at all. But when you have a second, what I learned quickly is that that space, it's really, really, really hard to hold that space for your individualism, you know, and that comfort. So I got uncomfortable really quickly. And kind of my mantra has been like, this is my story. This is my story. There's growth in my story. Because as much as I'm saying she's sweet and she's cute and she's giggly, she makes me uncomfortable because I'm really pushed to, you know, I have less time for myself, less time to, you know, do all the things, all, you know, work out, just read, all of that stuff that kind of would fill me up with just one child. And then I'm just trying to be really intentional about, okay, she is pushing me out of my comfort zone, and that's where I need to be. I need to be pushed out of my comfort zone, and I'm in the thick of it right now. So I couldn't tell you what I'm learning, but yeah. I would tell you, I'm sure I'm learning something. You know, if we circle back in 6 months, there will be a lesson. But yeah, she's pushing me out of the comfort zone for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you make space, you know, with the little, if you reflect back on when you first became a mother with Jonah, and in contrast to now having a toddler and a little one, like how, that's something that I still struggle with. And my girls are like almost 8 and 5. And I still am like, dude, when am I going to clip my toenails? Like stuff, right, things right. like that just slip through the cracks, you know? So I'm curious, do you have some things that you intentionally try to kind of hold sacred at least once a week or daily if possible? How do you manage that in your own
life? I think so. Things that I definitely hold sacred are working out. I try to do that at least 3 times a week. I think what has given me the most margin has been, I work with this really great psychiatrist, and she said, you know, Jen, I think that there's only room to be like really good at 2 or 3 things. So you're, you know, a mom, a wife, a student, a leader, and you work out, right? And so like, what are you really going to focus on? And then what's okay to like, just kind of be okay at? And again, that's been a struggle because when you tie your worth to being good at all the things, it doesn't feel great to say, okay, my workout today is 20 minutes. Okay. But that's enough, mm-hmm. you know? And I think I try to prioritize exercise just because it's so helpful for my mental health. But I spend so much time worrying about how I'm going to do all the things mm-hmm. that just trying to give myself permission, which I suck at, by the way, I say this as if like I've nailed it. I have not. Trying to give myself permission to just be okay at some things mm-hmm. gives me more space to practice what I need to practice, if that makes sense. Right. Yeah. And I think I've spent a lot of time reflecting on my purpose, and I've experienced kind of this cognitive dissonance, you know, like, so holding on to like these two competing truths of like, I want to be an excellent mom and an excellent leader and an excellent student, and knowing that I can hold space for both of those because I think they're both part of my purpose has been helpful.
Yeah.
And knowing that maybe right now some of those other things I used to practice might not fit into my long-term purpose. Does that make sense? So kind of like establishing my purpose and then holding space for that and then being marginal at the rest.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, we have to choose. I think one of the beautiful things about being a mom is being able to hold to really opposing, like you're saying, this cognitive dissonance. It's really uncomfortable just in terms of what that feels like in the mind and in the body and, you know, your expectations. But moms have to do that. You know, we mm-hmm. have to, it's like we have to hold these competing things all the time. And so it's just part of it. But what I was thinking as you were speaking and describing, like specifically your personal value or self-worth being tied to productivity, which I think is just an inherent part of our culture. You know, I think many of us grew up like, well, what do you have to show for today? And what I experienced that's so interesting is that as a mom, like, and I think it might have been my mom even who started to really encourage me to get to the end of the day. And instead of being like, oh my God, I didn't get anything done. I didn't vacuum. I didn't, you know, the dishes are still in the sink, blah, 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 blah. She was like, Claire, just like, how many times did you nurse today? How many like diapers did you change? How many times did you smile? How many times did you tickle? Like, start counting the things that maybe our society doesn't value as productive, but that like when it comes to forming a beautiful foundation for our children, like these things are valuable and they are productive. It's just that they're not viewed that way, you know? Yeah. And I think that that's a really important reminder for parents in general, but for moms who are spending a significant amount of their time with their newborns, you know, you do often feel like, oh my gosh, like there's people out in the world who are just like killing it. They're just like, they're washing their car. They're running their miles. They're going to work. They're achieving things. And here I am at home, like still in my pajamas with one of my breasts leaking at like 3 p.m. And like, what is happening to me? You know, and it is kind of an identity crisis. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's important, an important point to make is like, even though we don't feel productive, there's a lot of productivity happening under the radar.
Absolutely. And I think that's such a good point because I don't know if you've found this to be true or anyone listening has found this to be true, but have you found that sometimes people who are out of that phase, who have kids, but are in a different phase, you know, maybe their kids are in high school or moved out, they like forget what it's like. Have you experienced? Yeah, I'm seeing you like shaking your head. It's like, yeah, absolutely. And I think that that can be really hard because, and it is, even when Jonah was 3 before I had Jovi, I was like, yeah, it was not that big of a deal. Right. Yep. And I found myself doing it, but like even sharing those stories to say like, you're not alone is really, really helpful to hear and really powerful because it is so easy for people around you to forget that it's really hard to have an infant and, just connecting through those common struggles, I think is really helpful.
Right. And I think people forget for different reasons. Like I think some people forget because I mean, just lack of sleep makes us forget things.
Oh yeah.
There's like those factors, but I think sometimes people often kind of subconsciously block it out because it is such a vulnerable time and it is such a time of feeling out of control and out of sorts and you don't know who you are anymore, you know, and I think because of that, like we'd all rather just forget that it was so hard, you know.
So I think that's true.
Instead of like unpacking it and examining it closer and like you're doing, like there, you know that there are ways that these challenges are strengthening you. It's just, you can't find it because you, like you said, you're in the thick of it. And so I think that it's, but we've all had the experience where you're like, you're at the grocery store and somebody's like crying and throwing bananas on the ground. And the other one is like hungry and just pooped in their diaper. And you're like, oh my goodness. And then some like sweet old man walks up and is like, oh, you know, hold on tight to these days. Like they grow up so fast. And you're like, dude,
yeah.
Did you really just say that to me? But then you, it's like, it's a sweet thing to hear and a sweet sentiment, but you're just like, this day's already been 4 years long.
Right.
How is it going fast? It doesn't feel like it's going fast at all. So there's just those little things that happen.
Yeah. The longest, shortest time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's true.
That's what they say. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Well, is there anything else that you feel like might be important to mention to people listening who are taking in this conversation? So like we talked about, you know, leadership styles, and we talked about the impacts of COVID on families and how that's going and birth stories and all the things. Like, is there any sort of note that you would want to end on, or what do you
think? Oh gosh, it's like, I want to have something really profound to say, and I don't know that I do, but I think, you know, this is just a vulnerable time. It's just a vulnerable time for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I struggle so much to be vulnerable. And I think if we can just kind of collectively lean into that, we are going to get through this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know, I was reflecting on it. I don't know that I want to go back to the way things were.
Right.
Right. I don't want, like we've learned so much through this. I think that as much as we struggle, and I, as much as I talked about psychological safety, you know, at work and maybe struggling and my husband struggling with that, like there are places that have built more psychological safety. I think our country has really rallied for what is good and what is right and what is just. And we have a lot to do, a lot of work to do. But I guess my thing would be like, let's be vulnerable and not go back.
Yeah.
Let's just move through this.
Yeah. Yeah. And look for the, like we said, like look for the morsels of humanity in everyone. Like even the people who are acting maybe in a way that there's just no way you can even fathom. I'm not saying that we should be able to fathom all the ways, but always just trying to trace back and like maybe the person who's acting that way did break their arm in the second grade and no one was kind to them about it. Or, you know, like there just are, there are always ways to look for humanity and not excuse people's behavior, but just understand it more deeply, you know?
Yeah.
That makes
absolutely
sense.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It totally makes sense. I think that like we all have the option right now to lean into vulnerability or to step into shame. And if we can make the brave choice to be vulnerable, we're going to be stronger. If we sink into shame, we're going to get sicker.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of what my thought would be. Not to say that it's easy, because it's really hard and uncomfortable and sucky sometimes, but
it is super hard. But we all know if you go the other route that like you are just, if you burn the candle at both ends, you'll get to a point where there's no wax left and you're just like wick to wick, fire to fire, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's been my personal experience, is just trying to be like, it was like for a while I just was like, this is too much. And I just sort of like threw my hands up. And then I had this weird like backlash of like, okay, now I'll take on 13 jobs because to make up for lost time. And then I totally lost it. And then I had to call upon all the people in my life who I was willing to be vulnerable with. And, and the biggest takeaway for me during the COVID time was like allowing people to help me and allowing people to show up for me in ways that like I was really scared to. You know, and in that way, like, I do think that there are those lessons that are taking place that are really important, but that are so, like, they can be so painful and so scary and so dark. And like, we do have to let other people in order to be okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And people that you trust, because I would also say it's not fair for us to ask marginalized people to be vulnerable. Right. Sure. And that's why I think leadership is so important, because, you know, I think you look at the like vulnerable, low income mother, like, it's not fair for me to say, be vulnerable. That's the way through this, because that mom probably feels psychologically unsafe. So we need leaders who can pave the way. I mean, I think I put it really in the most simplistic form of be vulnerable or lean into shame, but we must recognize that people who are marginalized and oppressed, it's not safe to lean into vulnerability. And so those of us with privilege really have to create the spaces for that. So whether you're a leader or a mom with privilege, like, create those spaces. And I see that as what you're doing, Claire. You've got the privilege of this podcast, and you can extend that to other people to create safe spaces.
Yeah. So that's such an important distinction. Okay. And then one thing that I've has piqued my curiosity before we wrap up that I just would like to touch on is, you keep referring to psychological safety versus psychological danger or psychological threat. And will you just talk about that term a little bit and like, and how that affects both marginalized and privileged people who are experiencing all of the challenges of this time? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, so when we think safety, I think commonly people go to physical safety. So that makes sense to us. But there's physical safety, there's emotional safety, being safe within yourself, having that safe self-talk. There's moral safety, like doing the right thing, choosing to do the right thing. And then there's psychological safety, or you could think of it as social safety between people, between relationships. And so I think that that is one of the most important foundations to lay, because if you don't create a space for psychological safety, people cannot be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's too unsafe. Yeah. If I know that you and I don't have a safe relationship, and if I share something that you could use against me, I'm not going to share it, right?
Amen.
And so I think it's just creating spaces. And when I talk about privilege, you know, I'm a white middle-class female, and I have the privilege of waking up in the morning and not having to worry about the way like my sexual identity or my skin color impacts everything that I do throughout
right.
the day.
Right.
And so I really must lean into that and know that then I am accountable for making spaces safer for those that cannot express vulnerability.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I think we can do that through having hard conversations, through talking about, you know, people think that racism doesn't impact Montana, and that could be a whole other podcast in and of itself, but I've had a lot of conversations where people think like, that's not here. And I'm like, oh man, no, we are deeply a part of that. And so just, I think I saw your face like, oh my gosh,
I know. It's always funny because listeners can't see my face, but I'm often, my reactions are like, what?
Yeah. I just had that conversation. And that's not to say it's like saturated every conversation, but there's been a theme. And I think if we can start using these platforms to recognize that, yes, we are privileged. Yes, we are accountable to maintaining safe spaces so people can be vulnerable. That's huge. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, it did. And I think it's just that discomfort that people feel about, you know, we don't want to admit that as Montanans collectively that this is a part of us, because then that's shame triggering, right? And if we follow the shame trigger too far, then it's hard to really address the matter at hand. And so it's just this, it's again, like just that discomfort that people feel in acknowledging the reality of what is happening in the fabric of even our beloved state. So that's just where we're at.
Yeah.
But as soon as we are able to say that's where we're at, then we can change, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good. Well, I feel like it was wonderful to talk to you, Jenny, and I'm really excited and, as always, like honored to just share people's experiences and stories with other families and moms out there, because I do feel like it's just so important. In just knowing we're not alone is just so important, and that can happen in so many ways. But hearing like the spoken word of someone's story and hearing the emotion in their voice is key to the feeling like we can relate. So thank you.
Absolutely. Yes, of course. Thanks, Claire, for having me on.
So. You bet. And we'll say goodbye to our listeners at this moment.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Hello, listeners. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you do like what we're doing on Mother Love, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer.